In the blue light glow, we map the sparks inside. Tiny worlds and dishes, learning how to grow mine.
Welcome to Base by Base, the MapreCast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So imagine a developing brain is like a tightly choreographed skyscraper construction site.
Right, lots of moving parts.
Exactly. You have different cellular crews arriving at very specific times to do very specific jobs. But, you know, what happens if one of those very first crews uses the wrong metabolic blueprint?
Oh, that would completely warp the entire building by the time it's finished.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're looking at in today's deep dive. How a single genetic duplication can completely rewire the human brain. I mean, starting from just a tiny cluster of fetal cells all the way into adulthood.
It's this incredible cascading developmental domino effect, really.
It is. So the big question for you to keep in mind today is this. What really happens when a developing brain cell gets stuck in a high-energy metabolic state instead of maturing normally?
It's such a profound question. And honestly, it strikes at the absolute heart of neurobiology right now.
Because we usually only get to see the final result, right? Like the fully constructed building.
Yeah, exactly. For decades, we've known that certain genetic changes lead to altered brain function. But we are finally at a point where we can peel back the layers to observe the actual construction phase.
Which is amazing.
It is. It reveals how a microscopic metabolic shift in the womb sets off a chain reaction that lasts an entire lifetime.
And tracing that chain reaction requires an almost unimaginable level of scientific coordination. Today, we celebrate the work of Yonatan Perez, Dmitry Velmashev, Arnold Kriegstein, and their extensive team at UCSF, UC Santa Cruz, and UConn Health, who have advanced our understanding of the cellular mechanisms behind autism spectrum disorder.
Yeah, it's a massive effort.
Truly staggering. Note that this research was published in Nature Communications on July 4, 2025. Looking at the sheer scale of this collaboration, it's just mind-blowing. They're essentially figuring out a way to look at living, growing, fetal brain cells and fully formed adult brains at the exact same time.
And that scale is exactly what makes this approach so revolutionary. I mean, especially when you consider the historical challenge they're up against.
You're talking about how complex autism spectrum disorder is, right?
Right. ASD is notoriously complex and highly heterogeneous. There's no single autism gene that you can just, you know, point a microscope at.
It's a mix of hundreds of variations.
Exactly. Hundreds of genetic variations interacting with environmental factors. So mapping the fundamental biology is incredibly difficult. To make sense of it, scientists have to rely on specific genetic syndromes that act as clear models.
Right. You need a starting point where you know exactly what the genetic input is. That way you can actually track the biological output.
Exactly. And for this deep dive, the model they're using is called DUP15Q syndrome.
Okay, so break that down for us a bit. What exactly is DUP15Q?
Sure, so it's a maternally derived duplication of a specific region on chromosome 15, the 15q11q13 Prader-Willi-Nodelman critical region, to be exact.
Wait, why does the maternally derived part matter here?
That's because of a phenomenon called genomic imprinting. For certain genes, your body only uses the copy you inherited from your mother, while the father's copy is silenced.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And this critical region is one of those highly sensitive areas. A critical region basically just means it's an incredibly delicate stretch of DNA. Having the exact right dosage of genes there is essential.
So when someone inherits an extra copy of this active maternal region, it causes DUP15Q syndrome.
Right. Sometimes even multiple extra copies.
And even though it's a specific rare syndrome, it has a massive footprint in autism research. Doesn't it account for like up to 3% of all ASD cases?
It does. And to anyone outside of genetics, 3% might sound like a drop in the bucket.
Sure, just a tiny fraction.
But in the world of neurodevelopment, that actually makes it one of the leading identifiable genetic causes of autism.
So the logic here is, if you can map the exact biological roadmap of how DUP15Q changes the brain, you get a master key to understand how autism develops more broadly.
Precisely. But here we run into that historical clinical problem that has kept researchers in the dark for so long.
Timing issue.
Exactly. Science has always struggled to track when and where the brain actually diverges in autism. Does the damage happen early on during fetal development, or does it happen postnatally?
Right, because you just can't watch a living human brain develop in real time at a molecular level.
You really can't. I mean, you can't exactly take a biopsy of a developing fetal brain to check its RNA.
Yeah, that's a hard pass.
Yeah.
So we've always been stuck looking at the starting line, the genetic diagnosis, and the finish line, the adult behavior.
Yep, leaving the entire middle phase of development as this impenetrable black box.
So how on earth did they bypass that limitation? I mean, without a time machine?
Well, they meticulously analyzed both the finished building and an active replica of the construction site.
Okay, let's start with the finished building.
So to see the endpoint, the team used single nucleus RNA sequencing on 49 postmortem adult and adolescent brain samples.
And these are tissue samples donated after patients have passed away.
Yes, comparing samples from individuals with DUP15q to neurotypical controls.
But they didn't just blend the whole brain together.
Oh, no. They were very targeted. They performed the sequencing specifically on three distinct areas: the prefrontal cortex, the temporal cortex, and the anterior cingulate cortex.
Which lets them look at hundreds of thousands of individual cells and record exactly which genes are turned on or off.
Exactly. It gives us this incredibly detailed map of the mature brain.
Okay, so that's the finished building. But what about the construction site? How do you actually look at the fetal development stage?
For that, they turned to human cortical organoids. You know, they're often called lab-grown mini-brains.
Right, taking stem cells from patients with the DUP15q signature.
Yes, and coaxing them to develop into three-dimensional brain tissue in a lab dish. Then they used single-cell RNA sequencing to analyze these organoids at 50, 100, and 150 days of growth. Yeah, it finally opened a molecular window into those critical early fetal stages.
Wait, let me unpack this, because I can hear people listening getting skeptical right now.
Go for it.
They are comparing fully grown adult brain tissue to 50-day-old lab-grown cells. How do you even draw a straight line between two completely different environments? Like, a petri dish is definitely not a human skull.
It's a very fair point, and it's a massive challenge in organoid research. The researchers knew they had to prove their lab-grown data mirrored physical reality.
So how do they bridge that gap?
They used two fascinating validation methods. First, a technology called MERscope spatial transcriptomics.
MERscope. Okay, what does that do?
Imagine looking at a microscopic cross-section of physical adult brain tissue. With MERScope, you can actually see individual specific RNA molecules glowing in vibrant colors within the exact layers of the cortex.
Oh, wow. So they're literally painting by numbers with gene expression to verify the map.
Exactly. It proved the molecular disruptions weren't just abstract numbers. They corresponded to actual physical spatial organization in the human brain.
That is so cool. And what was the second validation method?
Xenotransplantation. They wanted to prove the organoid neurons would grow abnormally in a real living system, not just in a dish.
Wait, so they put them into an animal?
Yeah. They took 100-day-old human organoid cells, tagged them with a fluorescent marker, and physically transplanted them into the brains of neonatal mice.
That's wild. How long did they let them grow?
About 2 months. This provided the developing human cells with a real vascular system, blood flow, and a living brain environment to develop in.
Okay, so it wasn't just some artifact of sitting in a sterile lab dish.
Yeah.
They gave these cells a real-world test drive.
Exactly.
And what happens when you combine all of these perspectives? The adult brains, the glowing RNA slices, the human cells growing in mice.
You uncover the study's most fascinating discovery. They found this intricate baton pass of genetic vulnerability across time.
A baton pass? You mean the fundamental problem physically moves from one cell type to another as the brain matures?
Yes, that is the big reveal. During the fetal stage organoid development, the cells with the highest burden of dysregulated genes are the deep layer neurons and the early radial glia.
The precursor cells.
Right. These early cells are genetically devastated. But when they looked at the adult postmortem brains years later, the burden had shifted entirely.
Shifted where?
To the upper layer neurons. In adults, they were the ones exhibiting the most severe transcriptional disruption.
Wait, that feels completely counterintuitive. You'd assume the cells that start out broken would remain the most broken? Why does the problem jump to the upper layers?
To understand that, we have to look at how the human cortex is actually built. It develops inside out.
Inside out. Okay, so the deep layers form first.
Exactly. And once they are established, the upper layer neurons are born and literally have to migrate through the deep layers to reach their final destination.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the deep layers act as both the physical scaffolding and the chemical signaling guides for the upper layers.
So if the deep layer foundation is structurally compromised, the upper layers, which develop later, just don't have the right scaffolding to mature properly.
You nailed it. The initial disruption in the early deep layers sets up a fundamentally flawed foundation, and the upper layers end up paying the price.
That makes so much sense.
The researchers even found that changes in those early radial glia transcription factors in the fetal stage mathematically predict the dysregulation seen in the adult neurons years later.
It is a genuine developmental cascade. So what is actually going wrong in those foundational deep layer neurons? Like, what is the cellular crew messing up on day one of construction?
It basically comes down to cellular metabolism. The researchers discovered a massive abnormal spike in glycolysis within the DUP15Q deep layer neurons.
Glycolysis, that's the process of metabolizing glucose for energy, right?
Yes, burning sugar for quick energy. In normal brain development, as a cell matures into a highly specialized neuron, it has to undergo a critical metabolic shift.
So it has to stop burning sugar so fast.
Exactly. It has to transition away from glycolysis, which is a fast, slightly messy way to get energy, and shift into oxidative phosphorylation.
Oxidative phosphorylation. That's using the mitochondria, right?
The brain's highly efficient, mature way of generating power. It provides the sustained energy a mature neuron needs. But the DUP15Q deep layer neurons fail to make that shift.
So they just get trapped there?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They get metabolically trapped in a high-energy glycolytic state.
So what does this all mean? Is it like a teenager who drinks way too many energy drinks glycolysis and refuses to grow up, so they end up wearing a bizarre mix of a kid's uniform and an adult suit, which is the degraded identity?
Honestly, that is a perfect analogy. Because they fail to shift gears metabolically, the neurons essentially forget what they're supposed to become.
They just get confused.
Yeah. The researchers found that these trapped deep layer neurons actually degrade in identity. They begin co-expressing markers for both deep and upper layers simultaneously.
Wow. And if the cell doesn't even know what it's supposed to be, it can't possibly construct the right physical shape.
Exactly. And the physical data back that up. The researchers performed a Scholl analysis, which measures the physical complexity of a neuron's branches.
It's arborization.
Right. Think of it like measuring the intricate branching of a tree canopy. In both the petri dish organoids and the human neurons in the living mouse brains, the DUP15Q neurons were physically stunted.
They just didn't branch out enough.
Yeah, they exhibited aberrant, immature branching. Because their metabolic engine was flooded with sugar, they literally lacked the energy and identity to build the complex physical branches required of a mature neuron.
So a metabolic trap triggers a cellular identity crisis, which results in physically stunted scaffolding for the rest of the brain. That is just a breathtaking sequence of events.
It really is.
But earlier we talked about how this specific rare syndrome acts as a model for general autism. When they looked at the broader implications, did they find a connection?
They did. And this is where the paper moves from a fascinating specific study into a massive general breakthrough. Remember the baton pass?
Yeah, the vulnerability moving to the upper layers.
Right. When they analyzed those adult upper layer neurons, they compared that genetic dysregulation to existing databases of idiopathic autism.
Meaning general autism with no single known genetic cause.
Exactly. And the convergence was striking. The upper layer neurons in the DUP15Q syndrome brains showed massive overlaps in gene expression with idiopathic autism.
Wait, really? In what areas?
Particularly in genes related to synaptic functions and something called the MAP-Kirk signaling pathway.
The MAP-Kirk pathway. Let's unpack that for a second. That's essentially a major internal communication line inside our cells, isn't it?
It's a critical communication highway. It regulates how a cell differentiates, how it grows its axons, and how it forms synapses.
So finding that this specific pathway is dysregulated in both conditions is huge.
It's incredibly profound. It tells us that even if patients have completely different genetic starting lines, these different forms of autism ultimately converge on the exact same biological roadblocks in the adult brain.
Now, okay, so let's talk about clinical translation. How do these molecular roadblocks, you know, these stunted branches and dysregulated pathways, actually manifest in a person walking around today with DUP15Q syndrome?
To answer that, the paper utilized gene co-expression network analysis.
Okay, so grouping genes that act together.
Right, into clusters or modules. Think of a module like a synchronized orchestra. They found one specific module in the primary deep layer neurons designated L56.7.
L56.7.
Oh,
wow. I mean, what does this orchestra play?
It's highly enriched in DUP15Q syndrome, and it's packed with genes that regulate ion transport, channel activity, and synaptic organization.
Ion channels. So we're talking about the literal electrical activity of the brain.
Precisely. Neurons communicate by firing electrical impulses, and ion channels are the cellular gates that open and close to create those impulses.
So if the genes controlling those are dysregulated, the orchestra is out of tune.
And you disrupt the delicate electrical balance of the brain. This specific genetic module directly correlates to the real-world symptoms of neuronal hyperexcitability and severe seizures, which are unfortunately very common in patients with DUP15q syndrome.
So we're no longer just looking at abstract RNA data. We're seeing the direct biological mechanism causing clinical seizures.
Exactly.
It's heavy to think about, but having that concrete biological map is so powerful. If we draw a line connecting this clinical reality to the broader implications, does this imply that a targeted treatment for DUP15q could eventually help the wider autistic community?
That is the ultimate hope. By identifying these shared pathways, particularly the profound synaptic dysfunction in the upper layer neurons, the field now has a unified molecular target.
So treatments aimed at one might help the other?
Yes. An intervention aimed at stabilizing synaptic function or correcting the MAPK signaling pathway in DUP15q patients might very well be applicable to idiopathic autism.
Just because the endpoint pathology is so remarkably similar.
Exactly.
But, you know, as with every deep dive, we have to look at the boundaries of the science. What are the limitations here? Because we acknowledged earlier that while xenotransplantation is amazing, we are still dealing with models.
Right. The authors are highly transparent about the scientific boundaries. The organoids, as advanced as they are, only reliably capture early fetal development.
So the upper layer neurons generated in the organoids were still too immature to perfectly match the adult postmortem samples.
Correct. We're still essentially missing a few frames in the middle of that developmental movie.
What else are they missing?
Well, organoids lack a complete immune system and a vascular environment. They don't have microglia, which act as the brain's immune security guards.
Right.
And they don't have human blood vessels. We know both the immune system and the vasculature play enormous roles in brain development and autism pathology.
Yeah, you're missing the internal plumbing and the immune response of a true human brain. So, given those boundaries, where does the field go from here? What are the next steps?
The most tantalizing next step is the concept of interception. If we know that the initial duplication causes this early metabolic shift, the glycolysis trap, what happens if we intervene at that exact moment?
Oh, interesting. So trying to medically correct that metabolic shift early on.
Yes. Future research will undoubtedly focus on whether we can use targeted therapies to force those progenitor cells out of glycolysis and into oxidative phosphorylation.
Or maybe target the MAPK signaling pathways to prevent the abnormal branching.
Exactly, before the upper layer neurons migrate. This research just really reinforces why critical thinking is so essential when evaluating genetic data.
Because a genetic disease isn't just a static broken gene.
Right. It's not just sitting passively on a chromosome. It's a dynamic moving target that changes drastically from the womb to childhood to adulthood.
You can't simply look at the endpoint.
No, you have to understand the entire developmental journey.
Which brings us perfectly to our final takeaway for you to chew on today. To summarize all these complex molecular threads into a single picture, the duplication of a small region on chromosome 15 sparks an early metabolic crisis during brain development, causing deep layer neurons to lose their identity and stunting their physical growth. This early developmental disruption sets off a lifelong cascade, ultimately culminating in severe synaptic dysfunction in upper layer neurons that closely mirrors general autism.
A true developmental domino effect.
Exactly. So what does this mean for our ability to potentially intercept neurodevelopmental disorders by simply adjusting cellular metabolism before the brain finishes wiring itself?
That's the million-dollar question.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
In the blue light blue, we map the sparks inside. Tiny worlds and dishes, learning how to grow a mind. Sugar burning fast, the early engine's overdrive.
and the blueprint starts to blur where the deep lines used to hide. Yeah. If the layers lose their borders, what becomes of where and why? Branches reach out slower, like they're scared to touch the sky. But every signal leaves a trace, every shift is a reply. We hear a pattern in the noise, we won't let it pass us by. Yeah. Turn the data into daylight, make a hidden story sing. From a metabolic rush to the synapses that sting. If the circuit's running too hot, we can cool it, we can bring a clearer rhythm back to life. Yeah, let the next chance begin. Layer voices blending with the upper air tonight. Markers out of place like street signs in a different light than the later chorus hits. Too many synapse words to bear, and it echoes with the coming storms we've seen elsewhere. Not a single switch to flip, not a simple perfect cure, just pathways pointing forward, saying this is something sure. From the first fast breathing cells to the last electric swell, we follow modules like a map where new answers start to dwell. Turn the data into daylight, make the hidden story sing. Woo! From a metabolic rush to the synapses that sting. Woo! If the circuit's running too hot, we can cool it, we can break a clearer rhythm back to life.